Hastening the Inevitable, or Vulcan Speed Dating, by Indeed Captain, read by CookieMom6067. The sadistic little countdown clock that their captors had hung on the wall was taunting Jim. Yes, 5 hours was plenty of time for the rest of the away team to come and find him and Spock, and he didn't think that the Arduans, slimy, long-tentacled creatures with no identifiable defensive skills and a tendency toward monologuing, were much of a match for La'an's away team. But it didn't help that he didn't know what the countdown meant. Jim and Spock sat side by side, backs against the white plastic walls of their cell. Spock sat cross-legged, hands resting on his knees. Jim had his legs stretched out before him, ankles crossed. It was just an 8x8 cube. There were no visible seams or vents and no other distinguishing characteristics besides the countdown clock, which had ticked steadily down for the past hour. There was no sign of La'an, and the frown on Spock's face as he stared at his tricorder screen grew deeper and deeper. "Hey," he said eventually. Spock shook his head. "What?" Spock lifted his hand and held it over the side of Jim's face. There was a question in his eyes, but Jim didn't know what it was. "What?" he asked again. He could tell that Spock, whose expression had remained utterly unbothered through their whole mission until recently, even when they had beamed onto the abandoned ship straight into the middle of a trap, was preventing himself from rolling his eyes at Jim. Jim thought that was a little unfair. They had made an excellent team up until they'd been surrounded by Arduans, who had been displeased to find them instead of Captain Pike. "We will run out of air in 4 hours. Speaking aloud, we'll use the air we do have more quickly. Therefore, I propose we strategize via meld." He made an elegant little movement with his hand in the space next to Jim's face. "Ah, so that's what the countdown was for." Jim considered what he knew about mind melts. Aside from what the Vulcan High Council had provided to Starfleet when Spock joined, it was very little. He had to admit to himself, though, that he was curious about them. The Vulcans were so secretive, and he wasn't immune to the rumors that had floated through the Academy. The concept of touch telepathy had been romanticized, sexualized, demonized, every other eyes that he could think of. He nodded. What felt like static electricity sparked between Spock's fingers and Jim's face, even before Spock settled his fingers along his side points. Spock whispered, "My mind to your mind. My thoughts to your thoughts." It felt like being struck by lightning. The room around them vanished as Jim's mind spiraled inward or upward. He felt Spock around him. Felt surrounded by the same easy comfort he had recognized since the first time they met. His whole self was on fire, but he didn't burn. He felt warm, genuinely warm, and safe for the first time since, well, since Tarsus. "I did not know you were on Tarsus," Spock said. And though Jim heard Spock's usual flat tone in his head, he also felt something beneath the words. Rage, grief, and an unexpected urge to protect that flared and was stifled immediately. "Yeah, well, it's not exactly a fun story to tell at parties." At parties, the blurry darkness around them settled and the feeling of spiraling melted away. They stood in Captain Pike's quarters. A pot of tomato sauce bubbled on the stove and something aromatic was roasting in the oven. Glasses of wine and cocktails were scattered across counters and on Pike's coffee table, but he and Spock were the only people in the room. "Fascinating," Spock said, and none of the possessive protectiveness that had underpinned his mental voice remained. Jim wondered if he had imagined it. In this strange in-between place, our melt space has taken the form of the dinner party we attended 3 weeks ago. It had been a nice party. Jim had been shadowing Una again, and when Pike heard that he would be staying for a few extra days, he had put together what he called nothing special, but had become one of Jim's favorite memories. Jim loved serving on the Farragut. He did. But there was something in the air on the Enterprise that filled his heart in a way that was missing on his current ship. He had friends and respected his captain, but he had laughed more with Pike's bridge crew the night of the party than he had in the entire previous month on his own ship. He had told and been told dirty jokes while sitting between Ortegas and Chapel, had toasted to becoming a first officer with Una, had dried dishes for Pike while the older man told stories of their recent travels. But what he remembered most was sitting on Pike's couch for hours next to Spock, just talking. When Chris had eventually kicked them out, they had ended up in the observatory for just one more drink, and Jim had nursed the same subpar replicated glass of wine for an inappropriate length of time, just so the night wouldn't end. But the night had ended, and upon his return to the Farragut, he had blocked Spock's face in the starlight from his head until he had almost convinced himself that the attraction he had felt wasn't real. He shook his head, trying to clear it. When Spock looked sidelong at him, there was a subtle hint of amusement in his eyes. I enjoyed that evening as well. Jim's stomach dropped. How much of his emotions was Spock getting? Spock said, the amusement even more evident in his voice. There is no hiding in the meld. Moving on, why fascinating, Jim said, pulling his thoughts from how much he enjoyed Spock's company and back to Spock's original comment. Though it may be a futile effort, he would try to keep any secret feelings secret as long as he could. I have melded with humans before, Spock said, looking around Pike's room. Psi null individuals do not have the mental fortitude necessary to shape the meld space. I had intended to create a neutral location to prevent any unintentional harm from psychic energy, but I was not responsible for this. Maybe we're just on the same page. Perhaps, Spock mused, but regardless, bigger fish to fry, Jim said. Not the phrase I would use, but accurate. Where is La'an? The away team? I do not know. I had estimated the probability of them finding us before the time was up to be near 75%, but we have 3.75 hours of breathable air remaining, and I believe the most logical course of action would be a proactive one. Agreed. Any thoughts on how we might make our escape? Jim received a flash of an idea. His prone body with eyes closed, Spock screaming at the walls, the Arduans entering to see what the problem was, and then a spectacular display of violence from them both, and immediately started nodding. I believe we are more valuable to them alive than dead. Forcing them to re-enter the room before we run out of air may be the best way to get out. We can then rendezvous with Lieutenant Noonien Singh. I like it. Ready? Ready. Jim felt Spock break the connection, felt Spock's hand fall away from his face. But there was still a warm little wiggle in the back of his mind that reminded him that he wasn't alone. When his eyes had readjusted to the ugly fluorescence of the cell and his brain was firmly back in his own body, he tipped himself over and started to twitch. Spock's amusement was tangible, but none was apparent in his voice when he roared for the Arduans to help him. The invisible door slid open and he and Spock surged through it, and Jim found himself in awe at how attuned they were, even as they fought the Arduans and took off down the hall. On the same page might have been an understatement. They found La'an and the away team within 30 minutes and stole a shuttle and escaped from the Arduans' compound within the hour. All in all, Jim thought it was neither the most exciting nor the most dangerous mission he had participated in with Pike's crew, but he couldn't keep himself from thinking that having the opportunity to meld with Spock had made the excursion worth it. Even after Spock had broken their connection, he felt a warmth in the back of his mind, a feeling of bone-deep satisfaction, like he had just put the last piece of a puzzle into place. On the shuttle, he took a seat near the back while Ortegas and La'an took them skyward. After checking in with Pike, Spock took the seat next to Jim. Jim couldn't help but notice that Spock looked more tense now as they soared towards the Enterprise in orbit than he had been in their plastic airtight cell. He leaned over, bumping his shoulder against Spock's. Everything okay? Yes, Spock said, but he frowned. Are you experiencing any mental distress from our meld? Not at all, Jim said immediately. I feel great, actually. Is melding always like that? It is not, Spock said. I'm grateful that you are not experiencing negative effects, but I must request that you visit Dr. Mbenga after we return to the ship to be sure. Are you experiencing any effects? You seem tense. Jim didn't know how he'd ever thought the Vulcan was unreadable. Even as Spock gazed neutrally at the wall opposite them, Jim could read the emotions under the surface like words in a book. He felt responsible for Jim's well-being and was concerned that the meld hadn't gone as he expected. Jim could tell he felt protective of Jim, and he tried not to let that knowledge fuel the crush he'd been nursing since the day they'd met. I am experiencing residual emotion from our meld. Is that unusual? Highly. Spock was uncomfortable, so he let it drop. Jim just hoped that his less than professional feelings in the meld weren't the cause of his discomfort. Christine waved a tricorder around Jim's head, but he wasn't paying attention to what she was saying. Spock had vanished into Dr. Mbenga's office with him, and Jim found that he did not like that he couldn't see where Spock was. Was something wrong? What if melding with Jim had caused damage to Spock's brain? Kirk! Christine's voice was impatient. Jim realized she had said his name multiple times. Sorry, Christine, he said, smiling apologetically. I'm a little distracted. What's on your mind? He opened his mouth to respond honestly, remembering the proclivity the Enterprise crew had for gossiping, and shut it again. But Christine looked over her shoulder at Mbenga's closed door. Hmm, she said noncommittally. I get it. Get what? She grinned at him and said, there's something about him, isn't there? Jim dropped his face into his hand. Please don't say anything. Your secret is safe with me, she said, winking. I think everyone on this ship has been in that position at one time or another, myself included. What happened? We melded, Jim admitted, to communicate silently, and it was really nice. Ooh, she teased. That's big. He doesn't meld with just anyone, you know. He put his other hand up to his face, hiding the smile that threatened to overtake him. His stomach dropped with disbelief and shock and worry. He gasped, Jim? Christine lifted the tricorder again, reading the results above the bio bed. Hey, bud, take a few breaths with me. Everything's okay. You're safe. What are you feeling? I don't know, he said, and put his head between his knees. What's happening? I felt fine, and now... Do you have a history of panic attacks? Christine scanned through his medical file. Wait. Not since I was a kid, and they never felt like this. He scrubbed at his arms. He felt like his skin was burning. Something is wrong somewhere. Can you go get Spock? Christine paused. What did you say? Can you please go get Spock? Something is wrong. This doesn't feel right. You melded with him, she said slowly. She looked up at the scan results and then back to his file, eyes narrowed. Your chart says you're supposed to be Psi-Null. Yes, I did, and yes, I am, and he asked if something was wrong afterwards. I think something is wrong. Jim's skin hurt. He was overwhelmed by guilt and remorse, and oddly, a sense of excitement that caused more guilt. Christine turned abruptly over her shoulder and yelled, Joseph! But when Mbenga's office door slammed open, it wasn't the good doctor standing in the doorway, it was Spock. There was a green flush on his cheeks, and his pupils were blown huge, almost entirely obscuring the brown of his irises. Mbenga followed him out immediately, and Chapel said, Kirk showing psychonexaline. I know, Mbenga said. Spock's eyes met his, and in a flash of lightning, the medbay was gone. They were in Pike's quarters, sitting on his couch again. What's happening? Jim asked. And Spock's eyes were full of regret. The probability of this occurrence was so low that I did not consider it necessary to warn you, Spock said, and his mental voice was ragged. The probability of what? What's wrong? How did we get back here? This place exists for us now, Spock said. That's not so bad. Why do you feel like you've ruined everything? You feel my emotions? Jim thought about it, and he realized that the emotions clouding his brain didn't feel like his. They were tinged with different colors, a stoicism and repression that he had never experienced. I think I've been feeling you since the meld. Did Mbenga say something to you that made you worry? I felt it. Christine thought I was having a panic attack. Spock closed his eyes. Lieutenant James, I am so sorry. Spock, tell me what's happened. Spock took a deep breath. Sometimes, when two minds are particularly attuned, when mental compatibility is immediate and certain, a bond forms spontaneously during the first meld. A bond? What type of bond? I did not know this would happen. I am so sorry. I will ask Captain Pike to allow us to depart immediately. I believe there are Vulcan healers stationed on Starbase 14. The VSA has an experiment running in a nearby nebula. You will never have to think of this again. Spock, wait. Why do we need a healer? A healer is necessary to break it. When Spock said the word break, Jim felt his despair, felt the shame at the emotion and the effort to hide it. Stop! Stop, back up, explain the bond first. Jim felt his face blushing. He wasn't able to reconcile the rightness of being in the meld and Spock's panic. He was four steps behind in this conversation, and Spock's fear and grief were leaching the color out of their meld space. It is more than an engagement and less than a marriage. It is similar to what existed between myself and T'Pring before we ended our betrothal. Oh. He and Spock were compatible enough to spontaneously get psychically engaged, and Spock didn't want it. His crush flowered and wilted simultaneously. I see. And you don't want to be engaged to me. It is not a matter of want, James. I will not subject you to a permanent relationship which you neither consented to nor desired. You are human. Vulcans do not court each other in the way that humans do. What the hell do you mean it's not a matter of want? Of course it is. James, please. A spontaneous bond, especially with a psi-null individual, is so rare as to be nearly unheard of. You do not understand what this would mean for you. So help me understand. Spock hesitated. He stood, paced in front of the coffee table. Jim spread his arms along the back of the couch and said, "Bring it on." If we do not break the bond soon, you will be bonded to me forever. You will be mine as I will be yours. We would have to serve together, fight and live and die together. You would... Spock's embarrassment colored his face green, and Jim felt it turn his own stomach. You would have to assist me through a biological period of necessity in the future, one which Vulcans never speak of to outworlders. I may hurt you without meaning to. To change your mind after consummation would mean undergoing the most extreme type of mental trauma known to Vulcans. We may both die of it. I offer that we break the bond so you are free to choose a partner of your own volition rather than be forced into partnership with me, simply because we are compatible. Spock stood in front of Jim, clasped his hands behind his back, and waited for his response. His face was impassive. Why are you so sure that I don't want this? Jim closed his eyes and felt for the warm space in the back of his mind. He concentrated hard and probed into it like pressing on a bruise. Beneath the cool surface of control that Spock presented to the world, a hurricane raged. Jim was swept away in the intensity of what Spock felt. His fear for Jim's safety and well-being, his desire to protect Jim from all danger, and Jim was gratified to learn, the physical and mental attraction he felt. He felt the awe Spock felt at discovering the depth of their compatibility, the rarity of their bond, even on Vulcan. Deeper than that, he felt Spock's fears that Jim would say no, and he would be alone. That Jim would say yes and change his mind later, and that he would never be good enough as either a Vulcan or a human to deserve a partnership like the one he had accidentally found. When Jim opened his eyes again, he found Spock watching him. "Did you find what you were looking for?" Spock asked. "Yes," said Jim. He looked at Spock and pushed his emotions at him, everything he had been feeling for the past year. His immediate attraction to Spock, his admiration for his mind and abilities, the crush he'd been nurturing since the day Uhura introduced them, and the feeling he'd had as they had stayed up late talking in the observatory after the dinner party. He pushed that memory at Spock, Spock in the starlight, and the little voice in his brain that whispered, "I want to do this forever. You would never be able to leave me," Spock said softly. "You would be trapped with my illogical brain forever," Jim countered. "You would never be able to lie to me. You'll have to deal with my Tarsus baggage." Spock paused, weighing his response. Jim's heart already hurt. If Spock didn't want the bond, didn't want to be linked to a human with trauma forever, then he would just have to be okay with it. He would make himself be okay with it. "It would be my honor," Spock said. That was it. Jim launched himself off the couch at Spock and kissed him. It felt like he was being held and submerged in a bathtub and burned alive in the most pleasant way possible, but it didn't feel like a kiss. "We are still in the meld," Spock said in response to Jim's confusion. "Physical sensation is not the same." "Right. Can we leave? I'd like to do that in the flesh." "James, are you sure you want the bond? I am not convinced you understand the depth of the partnership that you are so cavalierly accepting. Vulcans are possessive and protective when it comes to their bondmates. It is not a human relationship." "Spock, I've wanted you since the moment I met you. You're saying that our minds are so compatible that we accidentally got engaged on the first date, and I didn't even have to go through the bullshit of human courtship rituals to find out? Count me in." When he opened his eyes, he was flat on his back on the bio bed, and Christine was waving a tricorder over his head. She and Mbenga were reading his scans with an intense and, in his humble opinion, slightly inappropriate level of medical curiosity. "Welcome back," Mbenga said. "Where's Spock?" Jim sat up. Christine smirked. As Jim sat up, Spock's eyes flashed open and he crossed the bay in three enormous steps. Without a word to his crewmates, he lifted Jim off the bio bed and started carrying him to the exit. Jim wriggled. "Hey, excuse me." Spock slung him over his shoulder instead. That seemed slightly more dignified than being bridal carried, and did not break stride. Jim waved goodbye to Christine and Mbenga from upside down. "You good, Jimbo?" Christine called as the turbo door slid open. "I think I might have signed up for this, actually," he called back, and he could hear her laughter as the door slid shut behind them. The end.